You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Missed my intro music. Hello, X-Men fans. It is the X-Men. I am Doc Coyle. Thank you guys for listening. And I'm being honest, I do miss all of you. I have been very, very busy lately. I just returned from a European tour filling in on guitar for the band Darkest Hour. And the tour was a lot of fun, but also very, very tiring. I had about another month of really busy activity beforehand, and now I'm coming home, and it actually took me probably 4 or 5 days to correct my sleeping schedule. The travel was about 30 hours of travel, including in the van and all of the flights and traveling all over. So it took a while to readjust. Then right after that, my other band called Bad Wolves, we're doing our first show Wednesday, May 24th, the day after this podcast comes out. So I got right into, just working on that material, rehearsing with the band. And I have to say, the stuff is no joke. It was kind of a great primer doing the Darkest Hour stuff because, I haven't really been playing super fast, brutal, technical, heavy metal stuff for a while. And, with the Darkest Hour stuff, it had that element of just very, very fast, rigorous rhythm guitar, and then some very intricate lead work, stuff that I hadn't really been playing for a while, or even stuff that I haven't really approached at all. Definitely got to try some new techniques. And then this stuff, the Bad Wolf stuff is much more modern. It has that kind of genty techniques and things that really were very alien to me. So it was good that I did the Darkest Hour thing right before that. So I'm kind of warmed up and ready to go. But even within that, I haven't had a whole lot of time to prepare. So we kind of went right into rehearsals. I actually just got done with rehearsal, and I don't have a lot of time, but I'm like, I'm probably a few days late. Like I don't like to go more than 2 weeks between shows. And, I just couldn't let it slide. I'm like, I'm busy as hell, but I have to get a show done. And luckily, I got to speak to the man, Mike Schleibaum, my buddy, the man I love, my brother from another mother, from Darkest Hour, to be on the show. And we recorded this live. And I guess every time you record something, it's live at the time it was recorded. So I probably didn't need that that preamble. But we recorded this in Leipzig, Germany, at this very interesting kind of leftist commune, very, very, very cool thing, for people enjoy that kind of thing. So that you'll kind of hear us do some chit-chat surrounding that at the beginning of the show. But I would like to plug one of the Jabberjaw Media shows real quick. I want to talk about the show 100 Words or Less. This is actually a podcast I have been a guest on, and one of the, one of my favorite music-oriented podcasts. And it is a discussion with people in and around independent music with host Ray Harkins. Now, Ray used to be the A&R guy at Century Media Records. He was actually the last guy that we, God forbid, worked with before we left the label. So I already had a relationship with him and was a fan of the show. And it gets in deep with creators and people who have been profoundly influenced by independent music and DIY culture. Upcoming guests include Josh Scoggin from 68 and Norma Jean, and also Cameron from Sorority Noise. And there are also 250 past episodes to deep dive into. Please visit 100 words, and that's 100wordspodcast.com, or listen on your favorite podcast app. And I'll also implore everyone to please rate and review this show, The X-Men, on iTunes. That really helps out. You know, we've had some big shows. We've charted. We've gotten out there. But the more you guys let people know, the better we're going to do it. I mean, I'm actually thinking about maybe doing some contests and do some giveaways if people review the show. So I'm going to brainstorm on some stuff and possibly give you guys some goodies for helping out. And also, we're looking for sponsors. We had some bands sponsor some of the earlier episodes, but have not had anyone for the last few episodes. So hit me up on social media. If you have a band, you want to play a song, you know, we'll work with your budget. You know, this is a price conscious endeavor over here. But here's the thing. I'm not going to talk your ear off with my little jibber jabber. We're going to get into our chat with Mike Schleibaum. Please check this out. I love this man. He's, you know, I imagine if it wasn't for him, I would not have gotten on the road with Darkest Hour. But it was a pleasure. Seriously, I have to thank those guys so much. I wasn't previously super personally close with the drummer, Travis, and their bass player, Aaron, who are newer members to the band. So I was really happy that I could get to know those guys. And Tito, who's the tour manager and the lighting guy, I've been friends with forever. It was amazing to spend some time with him. And then our sound guy and driver were awesome people too, and really helped us out. So definitely want to thank those guys. It was a great experience. I love just doing new things and traveling. And you know, my main thing about life is going against repetition. You know, that's something that, you know, is something I feel is a killer. So on that note, check out my talk with Mike Schleibaum, guitar player, founder, head dude for the band Darkest Hour. We're in business now.
I guess once you live in a society where the fucking Holocaust happened and now you're trying to live as a progressive person, it's like your fucking job to have these shit posted everywhere, to have these books separated by sexism, lesbianism, you know what I mean?
I don't know, you know what we're looking at.
This is like an office. We're like in this DIY anarchist collective. It's probably squatted. This is probably squatted, you know?
And what then is an taken anarchist over. Collective, exactly?
I mean, I guess it's hard for anarchists, you know, inherently don't organize like that because anarchy isn't really about that. So maybe anarchist is the wrong word, but this is clearly like a leftist thinking, you know, free speech kind of German haven where it's clearly run by a collective of people that are volunteering, mm-hmm. you know? And,
So for those who don't know, we're in Leipzig. Am I pronouncing that
correctly? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're in Leipzig, Germany. Backstage rock and roll interview.
Right now we're recording this. We're in Leipzig, Germany. I, the X-Man, you know, the fucking motherfucker over here. I was like, all right, I'm going to go on tour. And with Darkest Hour filling in. And I got to get a podcast. I wanted to get my other buddy in London. That didn't happen. We're out here. We're grinding. This is the real... shit. Your boy Doc Cole ain't been on the road in a minute. You know, in the shit.
Yeah.
All right. Do people know what it's like?
No, they don't know. And I think that kind of segues perfectly into like kind of why you're out here with us. But I'm not really sure if people understand the level of sacrifices that people have to make to be in a band. Yeah. There's so many sacrifices that everybody in my band alone has made, I mean, I can speak on that for sure, to exist as a band for 21 years, you know? And we had to make a move on this tour where Lone Star, you know, our longtime bro, guitar player. He's been in the band forever. He's sacrificed probably the most of his personal time because he usually lives in DC when we write records. Mm-hmm. He couldn't make all the time to be out here on tour because he's obviously got a life. He's got a family at home. He's got a job that isn't the band, you know? And so he had a lot of obligations, but at the same time, we all feel a strong obligation to the idea of what the band is, because the band has grown into an organism that's all its own. So for us to cancel all the European dates or even half of them, which happened to be the headliner, it just didn't seem like a good idea. So what we did is we went into our little mental Rolodex of who's awesome, right? And since Doc Coyle's on the tips of everybody's lips out here with his podcast, his Bad Wolves, his cover band jam night, you know, I mean, you are a man that's out there. So, and we love you. We've toured with you, kind of came from the same world. So it just seemed like a perfect fit. Yeah. So I'm not only honored to be on the podcast, but I'm also very honored to have shared the stage with you now in like a super intimate way where we played in a band together, man. That's so awesome. So
it's real shit. And it's also, I think, coming from our world, which is like the heavy metal guitar thing, there's a thing about playing with another guitar.
Yeah,
player.
Yeah, for sure.
And trying, you know, and I was very lucky to come up with my brother where, you know, as Mike Amott put it one time, who reached out to me, Mike Amott from Arch Enemy and Carcass reached out to me when Dallas quit, you know, because he was in a band with his brother and played guitar. And he mentioned certain things that only someone who played with their brother would know, which is, he's like, you can speak to each other without words. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can, like I could show them, you know, my brother riff or vice versa. We don't have to write it down or put it in Guitar Pro. Yeah. You just get it. You speak the kind of same musical language. And since, you know, he left the band, I've gotten to play with all these guitar players.
Yeah, you've been over everywhere.
And you just get to see how I lock in with this person, or you get to learn little things. You just get to see, oh man, this motherfucker's badass. Or you play with someone that maybe they're not holding it together quite as much as you would hope. So it's been a really great experience for me because I haven't been playing, you know, like the Bad Wolves stuff is heavy and it's fast and it has that technical thing going on. But this kind of with the lead guitar playing and, you know, there's techniques you guys do that I'm familiar with, but haven't, like I said, I have my motor's a little cold.
Yeah. Well, I don't think people understand either that you have to sort of have a repertoire of these techniques that you've worked on for a really long time. Sweet picking, string skipping, alternate picking, you know, and then you have to have the right hand to down pick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really crazy how there's so many guitar players in the world, but to find one that fits in the niche to be able to do this isn't that easy, actually, you know?
It's the same thing with God Forbid, trying to find someone that, especially with the right hand, you know, to be able to, that's where the power came from, because we were one of those bands where we didn't play with that much gain.
Oh, yeah, yeah, guitar amps. It was cleaner.
It was real clean, so the power and the heaviness was really generated from the hand,
you know,
and the playing. So, no, man, this was like a big challenge. Like, I'd say for 80% of it, it's like what I'd say is in kind of the new wave of American heavy metal, metalcore canon. Like, you just kind of get it or you don't. And a lot of that stuff was like, you know, pretty much up my alley.
Oh, yeah. Same you picked it up so fast.
Same thing with Lamb of God. Like, it's like, I just get it. We come from the same roots and our influences are all, you know, pretty much the same shit. So the language was already there. It was just a matter of that other 20% of stuff where it's like, fuck. Like, so there's this song called Timeless Numbers.
Oh, that's the monster. So I mean, I just want to say, too, that you did not have a chance to rehearse with the band.
Yeah.
You were put in a position where we gave you Guitar Pro, we gave you a set list, albeit not even all the right songs, and which is classic Darkest Hour style. And I really had faith that you were going to do this really well. And to be honest, in the past, when we've changed guitar players and et cetera, we never really had a fill-in situation like this. But I was very hands-on, like making videos, calling a dude up, texting. But because we were in the whirlwind of the other tour,
mm-hmm.
and because this was like a little bit of a crazy thing, we didn't really put you in a position to have a lot of preparation. So the fact that you were able to come basically watch one show with Lone Star, learn all of his patches, learn how to do all the changes, learn how to do the guitar change, learn how the set goes, on top of knowing how to play all these songs live for the first time, is extremely impressive.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and I do think part of it is easy because Travis Orban is insane on drums. He plays exactly what is on the album at the exact tempo. So that helps a little, but this, the, you know, Timeless Numbers, you're basically thrown into playing the hardest guitar solo Darkest Hour ever has. And until you figure out a better way to do it with a patch, you are playing with a fucking capo, which means everything is one fret higher than all the markings. I mean, for guitar players out there, to play this solo with strobes firing in your face, everybody having an iPhone out, knowing that the band and the sound guy and everybody's going to jump on your ass if you fuck anything up, it's pretty impressive that you not only handled the pressure of that, but the skill of it. And just like everybody else, three shows in, I mean, it felt like you'd been in the band forever. You know, I mean, it's tight. And, you know, I know some of these songs aren't exactly the style of guitar playing you would write, but you've definitely stepped into it.
I mean, it's not
like, that far off.
No.
It's not that far off
it's
from
not,
God Forbid.
It's not, like I said, there's even a couple parts on the new album where I'm like, oh, that's a God Forbid riff.
Well, hey, man, you ain't using them right now, so we're going to borrow whatever we want.
Gotta get what you can get, man. It's I think all that was very familiar, but A, I take this shit really seriously, and at the end of the day, when I've had the fortune to do this kind of hired gun fill-in thing on more than one occasion now. And here's the thing. If I'm, you know, at the end of the day, if someone's not looking at the stage, they shouldn't be able to tell that I'm there.
But it's even also, it goes deeper because you were able to pick up like how we don't go on the stage right when we check, and how you like, you have clothes that don't look stupid. Like, I know it sounds dumb to say, but you have to get in there and fit in, you know? You don't have a long hair and beard like everybody else in the band, but it doesn't look weird. And with the stage moves, it's rocking out. For like when Chris Norris joined the band, the dude was an amazing guitar player who didn't even own a guitar. And we definitely had to together teach him, because I was a dude who could barely play guitar but just went crazy everywhere on stage. We had to work together to make a live show, but you just picked up on all of those details, like, as a man who'd had experience. And I think
that's not picking up on it. That's just understanding,
I guess, what it is to be in a band.
The gig. Like,
yeah,
you got to fit. You know, like, I had this guy, Bill Hudson, on the show, and he plays with, like, Trans-Siberian Orchestra and fucking all these bands, and he's just a pro. Like, you hire that guy because you know he's going to show up and he's going to do the job. He's going to play the part. He's going to perform. He's going to bring the look. He's going to bring the, you know, he knows, you know, there's even little things. It's like understanding how to, you know, navigate a backstage area or deal with a sound check and helping load in gear and get it, you know.
Well, not to cut you off, but dude, you also handled the fact that Darkest Hour tours a little lo-fi. You know, I mean, I think people think that we're in a tour bus all the time, but we've been in a Sprinter van. We've been in nice enough hotels in the beginning, and everything's nice enough, but
so
it's not glamorous.
So I'm gonna give people a day in the life.
Yeah,
so
perfect.
This was very similar to when I toured with Unearth. Mm-hmm. I filled in on bass guitar and did a similar run, like 2.5 weeks.
Must have been different without the pressure of having to play all the shit the same way.
Oh, I mean, it's well, what are you talking about?
Well, like, it has to be a heightened sense of like something going on in your brain. You have to warm up to play all these solos.
Oh, no, no. Playing guitar and playing bass, and for what these kind of bands are, is a totally different thing, and it has nothing to do with
your lifestyle of day of, basically. You wouldn't say it was any different because you were doing bass.
No, I think you do not need the same level of coordination. I feel like you could, you know, you could take liberties with things. You could maybe have that extra beer before the set or something like that. And I know that might sound like I'm discrediting that instrument. I think it's probably, I don't think Alex Webster and Cannibal Corpse can do that. Or Steve DiGiorgio when he's playing for Death, when you're doing something or like that new guy. I don't even know if he's a new guy, but that band Havoc, like their new record has all this fucking sick bass guitar playing. So I'm saying for what I was doing with that band, which was very much meat and potatoes parts. But I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about the lifestyle component and the logistical elements of how we do this. So when, God forbid, went to Europe, almost every time past a certain point was on a bus, and we would share a bus, you know, and I'll be honest, that makes touring in Europe a lot easier. So the way we're doing it is very much similar to how a band would tour in the US in a van. You're in a van, you have all the gear, and they have these big Sprinter vans out here, so you can fit all the gear and all your luggage in this compartment in the back. These are pretty big vans.
And this is a professional business that we're renting the van from that rents to bands. Yeah. They're out of the Czech Republic, but there's a lot of these all over from Germany, wherever, UK. So that is a little different than in America because there's a lot more options.
Yeah.
I mean, we are able to find a driver, a van, and gear. You know what I mean?
From like one place?
From one place.
Like a one-stop shop.
And have it drive right to us. I mean, I just don't know how you do that in America, but...
Was it just maybe the business kind of... how you make that a profitable thing doesn't really exist in America?
I don't know, yeah. Or there's just not that many, but I think the demand for this style of touring is there.
Yeah.
Because clearly these people have fleets of vans.
Well, it's not only that. There's an entire infrastructure of venues.
Yeah,
and there's festivals and communities and... One thing I've noticed about Darkest Hour, even though I think you guys are as metal as the day is long, you've been able to maintain a connection to the original kind of punk hardcore scene that you came up out of, you know, despite, so it has less to do with the way the band sounds, but more of kind of the ethic or whatever the band represents. That still exists, you know, like we were just in Poland and Czech Republic last couple of days, and that's who it felt. It felt like a hardcore show vibe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the you know, not to get away from the day of, but you know, a lot of the venues we play are kind of they have been squatted, some of them, but that means that they weren't originally intended to be clubs. And then some of them are kind of your low, smaller size venues. I mean, the venue in Copenhagen was beautiful.
Yep.
You know, the venue in the Netherlands was incredible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, these are a lot of the same venues I'll do, you know, when we did bigger metal tours, you know, with Devil Driver, Il Nino, bands more kind of in the mainstream heavy metal world. You know, it's a lot of those same venues. So it's kind of a cross section between that. But I guess you're one of those bands, you're able to kind of float in between worlds.
Yeah.
Or you can go and do the big Machine Head tour and yet you're still accepted. You know,
yeah,
you're
I
not
mean,
kind of
staying accepted by this world isn't always that easy when you dip into touring with Machine Head and doing the Mayhem Monster Energy drink tour.
Yeah.
But so we're in a van. You wake up. So you wake up in a hotel every morning next to
or a hostel. That's
or
a
hostel. So
they have these like hostels out here, and it's the biggest difference is you'll be in a room maybe with like four beds. So it'll be like a bunk beds. And then sometimes you'll have like a shower in the room and a bathroom, but sometimes it'll be like a communal shower. And
that's the brutal situation.
Yeah. But the thing is, I think it sounds like, honestly, for the most part, it's not that bad. It's just the fact that you're only in the room for maybe 5 or 6 hours sometimes. And you get in at 1 a.m. You have to be out of there at 7 or 8. So you're not, you know, it's just, it's very like rough and tumble, you know,
yeah.
And this particular tour, there were no days off, at least in the part I was on. So we've had some long drives. So you're in and me, listen, guys, Doc Coyle is not getting any younger. His back broke, you know. I can't do it like I used to. So I just think, so what the thing about you that, you know, always struck me, and the thing that's amazing about you is your enthusiasm never seems to wane. Like, you're the guy, you know, you're handling the money, you're doing the budgets, you're dealing with all the business aspects of everything, and yet you still find a way to, you get on the stage and it's like you're in heaven and you still love. Is that the thing that keeps you out in the van and fucking grinding it, or what is it? Like, how are you able to stay so amped?
I was thinking about the answer to this question. I mean, it's not just drugs, so I don't know. I think, so one thing is I love guitar. You know,
yeah.
I love playing guitar. I mean, you've seen that. I'll play it all day long backstage. I don't give a fuck. I don't care who I drive out of a dressing room or annoy. But I really enjoy the adventure of this. You know, I mean, I grew up playing team sports, you know, played ice hockey a lot and been in playing in bands and touring with John since I was 15, you know. So I really love the like kind of like group pirate ship sailing through the fucking world, just like meeting different people at the shows, becoming friends with like our drivers and the people that book the band, and just kind of experiencing what the world's like. I mean, to be honest, I think other than my love for guitar and heavy metal, I think my love for interacting with people around the world and kind of learning and just like seeing, oh, this is what a toilet looks like here, and breathing the air somewhere. And I don't know. To me, the older you get, if you take that kind of out of life, it starts to get, man, it starts to get bleak. And the hard part is for me is that I've manufactured such an amazing life outside of the band. Like, I have a beautiful daughter, a very supportive, caring wife who is a big part of how I stay enthusiastic, because she really helps with my perspective on things, along with a longtime manager, you know, who's a good friend of mine, Mike Mowry, who helps with perspective. And I would say that the last ingredient is John Henry. Although he and I have like a very, what does he always say? Don Dock and George Lynch relationship. He's a lifer, man. He's dedicated. And he also is really good at not overreacting to situations, staying positive. It's always a good time around John Henry, you know? And without him, I wouldn't have been able to navigate the identity of the band and keep it alive, because the reality is that some people in the band, no matter how dedicated they are, occasionally have a shelf life and move on to other great things. So it's really a combination of loving this kind of pirate ship voyage out here, along with also loving music. And I think I would also add, like, I was able to go to college. Got a college degree, got a 5-year social work degree, bachelor's in social work.
Yeah, I heard this on the Justice Show.
I'm just saying, like, it really helped with my perspective that I'm here because I want to be here. I don't feel trapped.
Yeah.
I could check out at any point and go get, quote, real job or whatever. I'm not scared to do that, even though I've drawn all over myself with crazy ass tattoos.
That shit don't matter. Everyone has
and
tattoos
I've left
now.
A digital footprint of crazy shit that you would want to sort through before you hired me. But in the end, it's made me the person that I am, you know? And that gave me the confidence to tackle those budgets and look at them when they're not going to make money and figure out what to do and try to keep your head about it, because managing the entire financial aspect of a band is something that someone in the band has to watch.
Yeah.
You can have a manager, you can have whatever, but you got to have a managing member. And so it falls into my lap because I love the details and I've gained everybody's trust in the band over time with money. So I think that's your big potpourri of what's going on, you know?
Well, there's pretty much every band we know has a me or a you, right? That guy, like the thing that's funny about this show is a lot of time it's the people, like me and you, every conversation we have is basically a podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like,
well, you're super funny, so anything you say I want to record. But that you having been a band dad was also another really great quantifier for why we knew you'd be perfect, because we have a lot of band dads now in the band. Aaron Deal was a band dad as well, and so he understands the sacrifices band dads make, and that makes it easier for us to coexist in a band together, you know?
Well, you got, listen, I have this cross-section of experience being kind of at the forefront of the band leadership, but then also, you know, being like when you're the hired gun, where you basically just have to show up and do that particular thing, and I'm not dealing with promoters, I'm not dealing with merch, I'm not dealing with managers, just show up. Or even bands where I'm in the band, but there are other people doing that stuff, and I'm just kind of there as like a release valve for like, oh, we have a question about this, or Doc, what do you think about this? Because the truth is, there can't be 5 band leaders. You know?
No, I mean, there can't. And you know, what else is interesting about it is that the first time I went on tour to Europe wasn't with Darkest Hour. I toured a little bit with his hardcore band, Battery, from Washington, D.C. And I was basically just a hired gun. Yeah. You know, I had not composed anything, never done a tour. They just wanted to move it to two guitar players.
And so what is it? So were you in Battery before there was a Darkest Hour?
No, I was in Darkest Hour first, and that's how I met those members of that band. Darkest Hour was opening up for we basically were the band where everybody was at the show. So in old days at hardcore shows, bands would cancel all the time. So they would just grab us from the audience and we would play. And we played like a lot of our first shows in Washington, D.C. doing that. And then our first EP, The Prophecy Fulfilled, came out on the Battery tour I was on. So Darkest Hour had put out an EP before that already.
So my whole thing is, you know, this being the X-Man, I was going to be like, all right, X Battery. But then I was like, there's this thing where I have people an idea for someone for the show, and they'll have that band will break up, but then they'll get back together. So it's like they were kind of an X-Men, but now they're not. And I'm like, here's the thing, what hardcore bands pretty much never really break up.
Yeah, I mean, it's an addiction that people can't get away from usually, like an awesome hardcore show, but whether they maintain after a show or two after they're back is a whole other story.
Well, it's not even that, but those always like, all right, such and such is reuniting for this benefit show, or whatever. It just seems like in that realm, the bands are never really ever broken up.
Yeah, and Battery just put out a new song that we wrote and recorded like for the reunion. So we also even created new music.
But basically, my whole point is I'm trying to find technicalities
be an X-Man.
So you can. But one thing you are, and I said this, I was like, he's X straight edge.
Oh, yeah. I'm ex-vegan also.
Ex-vegan.
Ex-edge. But I mean, I guess it's fine. Your X-Men can still love their past because I still love the straight edge. I still love veganism. Like, some of my best friends, every person.
Are black?
Yeah, well, that. And every person in my wedding party was an ex-straight edger. You know, those are my core friends. And veganism is still a great way to eat. I wish I ate a little bit more like it out here, but I have lost a thing called self-control as I've gotten older, and I just can't do it.
But that's the thing. Is doing those things that enjoyable? That's like, you know what? It's just worth it. Like, this stuff is just fun.
Well, to me, straight edge was kind of always about being true to yourself. So, you know, I feel like I've been true to not only myself, but everybody that's around me. I mean, I have maintained friendships over two decades easily with a ton of my friends. So I feel that, like, although I've changed dramatically as a person, I've still managed to at least stay within the realm of some kind of acceptable social behavior because I'm proud and happy to have made so many friends through hardcore, straight edge, veganism, etc. You know.
Did you get the hate? Did you get the people?
No, actually, never really, because I think it's just been an honest transition. I mean, really, like Brandon Schapetti gave me a little bit of grief at the beginning. You know what I'm saying?
What kind of grief? Did he strong arm you? Did he put you in a headlock?
just fun little ribbing. You know, fun little jokey jabs that I deserved for sure. So, and also my good friend Mike McTernan. You know, I got some straight edge friends who like to jab it in there, but at the end of the day, good people are good people. And so if I need to be an X-Men because of my ex-moral stances, I'm very, very happy with that. Because I can't really think of any band that I have quit or stopped doing.
Yeah. Well, listen, the way I look at the show is that's the theme of the show, but I would never use that as a sticking point to not have someone on who's great to talk to. And that's, at the end of the day, it's about having great conversations with interesting people that will hopefully inform the listeners or entertain.
Yeah. What about the idea that, you know, to truly know what it is to be an X-Men is to also know what it is to not be one.
Yeah.
So well, it's possible to have that perspective as I am, like you said, like there's been so many hard times where Darkest Hour probably should have or could have stopped. But, you know, now where we're at, is at least on the digital footprint level looks pretty amazing.
No. So that's actually, you know, the reason I almost tried to cut you off there for a second was the fascinating thing to me is when I look at Darkest Hour, I look at Unearth, and then I look at God Forbid and Bleeding Through and Shadows Fall and all these bands where we hit this point or this, you know, this moment of breaking off, and you guys kind of stuck through. Like, do you have any perspective on, like, do you have any feelings about us falling off? Did that make you think, like, what are we doing? Or did you look down on our bands? Like, look at these fucking guys, fucking quitters.
No, not at all. I mean, the one thing I can tell you is that every band has a shelf life. Like, maybe you're the Rolling Stones and it's 70 years, but maybe you're not. So what you do with your band experience for however long you get it is up to you. But in the end, is the sum of this whole thing. So I feel like even though we've managed to go on for so many more albums than some of the bands you mentioned, like Shadows Fall and God Forbid, you guys basically did everything. You did everything that we've done. You've done big tours. You've done small tours. You did van tours. You know what I mean? I guess the only thing that feels a little different is like the musical legacy you build by continuing to compose these albums. But you've even done that. You know, you've even continued to make music. And I think a lot of people, I encourage them, my friends that are in bands that don't get super big, or my friends that do and then quit. Mm. I encourage people, like, this is not sports. Creating great music is just creating great music, and everybody should do it regardless of whether they have the ability to continue down this path for so many years. I mean, like, I was lucky to have come from a middle class family from Washington, D.C., you know, and have a lot of things put in the lane for me to be able to continue doing it. And not everybody's given the same set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to, everyone has an experience. What you do with it is up to you. And in the end, there is a threshold where you've basically experienced what being in a band is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm going to cut in real quick on our conversation with Mike Schleibaum to pump up another great Jabberjaw Media show. This one is called Peer Pleasure, and it is hosted by Dewey Halpaws. And he lets you take the role of a fly on the wall, listening in on real talk with your favorite artists and creators while they discuss life, love, loss, and present the stories that shape them into who they are today. Hear them in their own words through candid and genuine conversation on Peer Pleasure. Upcoming guests include Anthony Green from Circus Survive, Adam D of Killswitch Engage, Jeff Rickley of Thursday. Visit peerpleasurepodcast.com to check out the Peer Pleasure podcast today. And don't forget to rate and subscribe on iTunes and get all of the latest upcoming shows every Saturday. Now back to our talk with Mike Schleibaum.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
Well, you know, I think the way I look at it is, you know, there is that I don't know, just like me being kind of out of this lifestyle, and it really is a lifestyle.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That you...
Yeah, we're savages.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you walk in, you got your lotions and potions. I'm glad I have a chance to talk about this, because when Doc showed up on the tour, I had stopped shaving. Like, I it's a pain in the ass to shave out here, so I just was like, I'm just going to go and grow a beard. Doc shows up, and he's like, yo, bro, you got that baby face, and you looking, I don't know, man, you might want to clean it up before we go to England. And then all of a sudden, there was, like, not a savage around. And he was like, yeah, like, why do you guys smell so bad? And it kind of just made us all go, like, oh, we're kind of around a regular person. Like, maybe, John, you should take a shower. And like,
dude. Well, I started shaming these dudes. I started looking at all the garbage in the van. I was like, oh, yeah. What is this? Oh, shit. God. Clean this up.
Another thing that was shocking was, you know, we get 3 bottles of liquor a night and go through one usually before we play.
And I shamed them about that. I was like, guys, this is not very healthy.
You shamed us for about a day or two, and then you got on the program.
And then Stockholm Syndrome started to set in.
Exactly, exactly.
And I was like, listen, man, when you're inside, you got to do what you got to do to survive.
Yeah.
You know, I joined a gang. You know, I got me a couple tattoos.
We jumped you in. We're trying to get you to get a Darkest Hour tattoo, but you're like, no way.
Well, we'll see. Well, the thing is, if I ever, you know, in my inevitable transition into politics, you know, if I have a razor blade tattoo,
you don't want to be
on my
associated
neck
with us, dude.
You know, I don't know how I'm going to explain my way out of that one. No, but it was, you know, vice versa. It was kind of this shock for me, like, oh yeah, you do get kind of deinstitutionalized. Like, there's this of the lifestyle where you're like, you know, especially and also getting a little older, and you say, you know what? I don't want to deal with this anymore. And to kind of be in this, you have to condition yourself. You have to have thick skin in more ways than one, you know,
yeah.
and you have to have a threshold to say, hey, I'm not going to get a lot of sleep today. I'm kind of going to be in a little pain today. I'm going to, you know, we're going to be in a place where the conveniences, I'm not going to have a Starbucks around the corner all the time, or I'm not going to have all these things. And every time I revisit that at a different point in my life, it definitely makes me ask a lot of questions like, is this what I want to do? Should I be doing this? What I want to do? You know, so it's, you know, and that's just me being like honest. Cause I think the thing I've learned the most about my life recently is that, and this is sometimes I'll come to you guys, is that I'm not going, if I don't like something, I'm not going to shut up.
Well, yeah.
I'm going
to, well, we wouldn't ever want you to.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, but there's what's the biggest thing that's changed about my life is being able to say, if I don't like something, it's within my power to change it.
Yeah.
And most people, I don't say most people, but I'll say that I think the problem with a lot of people is they just accept the things in their life that are inadequate. And when you kind of make that that decision, say, hey, I'm not going to deal with this, because at the end of the day, when you do that, you're never a victim, because you will say, well, this doesn't work for me. You guys have a good time. You know, it's about, you know, I think having that sense of dignity has probably become my most prominent personality trait, or something that I try and live with every day. And that's whether I'm working at, you know, working at Coachella, and I was getting some beef with like some of the people over there. And I was just like, you know what? Like, I had this manager giving shit about using the bathroom after being on my feet for 14 hours and like my back's hurting. And I was just like, nah, motherfucker. If I, like,
Doc Cole needs to use the bathroom.
I'm a grown ass man. Yeah. I don't need to, I'm not in fourth grade. I don't need to ask someone to use the bathroom anymore. But it's about that dignity of saying what you will and what you won't take, you know?
Yeah. So, and also some of the ideas that you sort of just thrust upon us unknowingly, just like, bleeds into your whole perception of the day. Like, you know, you clean yourself up, you clean the van up, like you try to kind of make sure you take care of everybody around you. And then all of a sudden, like, this idea of paying attention to like your worth matters, you know, rather than just being like basically a complete savage, which was where we were at when you showed up.
Well, here's the thing. It made me think about this idea. Like, I started thinking about all these things about, in a way, sense, like workers' rights. Like, we're out here grinding, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, do we provide a service? I guess that's in the eye of the beholder. but there definitely is something that we're providing.
Of course.
And in a way, like I look at like this one budget proposal, which like I think got rid of the entire National Endowment for the Arts, where we're becoming this country that doesn't care at all about supporting art, you know. And it's like music is so ubiquitous that we really don't value it in the same way I think they do value music and musicians more in Europe. That's why these venues are more well funded, and they put a value on the fact that these bands go out there and put themselves out there. And it just made me think, I was like, you know what, man, if we got together and, you know, demanded certain things, say, hey, we need, because here's the thing, we're human beings, we're grown men, you know, and grown women as well, we have on the road. And you know, you have to be able to carry yourself with dignity, I think, every day. And you know, I think it's a little different when you're young, when you're 21 years old, you don't care, you don't know any better.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, the unionized thing is actually really interesting to me, because there's a few things going on that are just hard to wrap your head around. One is that the idea of valuing music monetarily has been completely destroyed. But I don't think it's necessarily the internet's fault, because what I see is something more basic. People will come to your show. People have no problem buying t-shirts, buying cloth items. You know what I mean?
Of course not.
But the idea of taking that money and buying a band's album is a whole other experience.
Yeah, but
and I know, and it's fine, people can choose where they want to spend their money, but I just think it goes to the core where people are like, well, I can get this music anywhere. So I can get it on my phone, I can get it on my fucking TV, I can get it on my laptop, whatever. I need this physical thing that's a t-shirt, right? But music provides this thing. You're saying, I'm sure we provide something. I mean, we provide some of the most basic important things that people need for basic happiness, like a place for people to get together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know tons of love stories that started at a Darkest Hour concert, including my wife's sister, who got married to a guy that she met wearing a Darkest Hour t-shirt at a bar. Mm-hmm. You know, like providing a place for people to get together with ideas, you know, and talk about those things is one of the most basic needs that humans have. And so the idea that maybe we could rally together as a group, because we're all musicians, and try to get the rest of the world to say, hey, we all need music when we're mowing our lawns or we're driving our truck route or whatever, so let's all get together and help these guys out. I don't know, it's hard when you're in a business where scabs are aplenty.
Well, yeah,
people,
but look,
have no problem
there, yeah,
around.
But there was just a writer's strike that was avoided,
like a TV writer's strike.
Yeah, and they understand that there is a service provided and that there is something of value. And I'm not talking about the physical units. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the community as a whole saying, like, why, let's say this, why don't we have Steven Tyler and Quincy Jones going to Congress saying, hey, we need this for our industry to survive.
What do we need?
We need money. We need funding. We need, like, you know, how come Swedish bands, yeah, you know, like I had Peter Irwards from
Canadian bands too.
Yeah. No, I had Peter Irwards from In Flames on here saying that their rehearsal studio was paid for by the government. They had equipment there and they had advantages. And what I'm just saying is that we should be able to do this and not live like psychopaths, you know,
yeah.
Like it's, and I get, listen, it's all, I understand paying dues and all that stuff, you know, and I've paid my dues and then some, but it just makes you think about things in a different way. I'm just saying everyone has a lobby, you know. I was listening to the Knicks game and they had the Correctional Officers Association, you know, paying for advertising because they're trying to keep their jobs. They're trying to keep the drug war going so that there will always be people in jail. But why don't we have someone speaking on our behalf? There's things we need, you know.
I do think,
why does farmers get subsidies?
Are you an ASCAP member?
No, I'm with CSEC.
Okay, well, ASCAP does have a like arm where they rally together. They have a president.
Yeah, but and that's I get a too letter limited, from, man.
It is. It is. But the idea that there are some trade organizations is there. And it's possible that your idea isn't that crazy.
Oh, I don't think it's crazy. It's, it's just
may
it's,
have to be a reaction to the way that things are going in our country, you know, if they continue to go where it's headed.
Well,
you know?
I just think it's we not listen, if you look at what happened to the music industry, you look what happened to the magazine and newspaper industry, you look what happened to the porn industry, how our business models were disrupted by the technology, right? There was all the stuff we gained, but there was a lot we lost. And listen, it is being made up in other areas. I think last year was the highest ticket sales, you know, gross ever in the United States. So
live music's.
Yeah. And the thing is, you said about the scabs, like you were talking about how you'll do music for television and they'll want something that sounds similar.
Oh yeah.
So that's the thing is, let's say we all go on strike. What are they going to do? They're just going to get the, you know, the
B team.
Yeah. The GarageBand version of our shit or whatever. And it is what it is, but it's just something that, that, like I said, that
and that goes to a core thing though. That's how addicting and how you know, intriguing this whole life is. People want to get into it. They'll do anything, you know. And it's not just that. We don't just need artists that are willing to do anything. We need artists that are providing something that's like a reflection of a world that we can relate to. And those are two different things, you know what I mean? But I think the reason that there's so many people out there cluttering up the airways with the white noise of whatever's happening is because being a rock star, being everybody's center of attention, is just something that most basic humans seem to love.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm gonna let you go real quick because we actually gotta get some food, man. Are you hungry?
Yeah, this is a good time to eat so it can settle before you jump and do your backflips on stage.
Oh yeah. So I had one more thing I wanted to know. So your guys' previous record, self-titled record, was
kind of
a it was a step out for the band in this. It was, I guess, a commercial. It was Darkest Hours shot at like a commercial metal record,
more so than Deliver Us. And listen, The Human Romance is like a Machine Head style heavy metal album. Peter Witchers produced it. We toned down the guitar solos. The only thing we didn't do was take the jump on the vocals.
Yeah.
You know, and that was sort of our last shot at like, can we change everything but the vocals? But, you know, I love the self-titled. The question was...
No, I haven't even gotten to the question yet. Yeah. But, I'm just saying it's something I noticed, and I really like that record. But you know, us talking about it, you talk about like kind of experiencing these barricades or things just it not working out how you wished it would have worked out. And I think it's pretty obvious when you hear the new record, which is almost the polar opposite in its approach and the way it was recorded. What about that experience of kind of like, was it your goal? Like, did you want to be a Machine Head? Trying to get to that playing theaters? Like, and
we were, you know, with that album, you know, that was our eighth studio album. So we also had changed our rhythm section. Okay. Paul left the band at the beginning of the Human Romance touring, and Ryan left the band before we started our 2-year world tour thing with Machine Head. So basically, between the Human Romance and self-titled, the band got a new rhythm section. Along with that, the band started rehearsing completely different. Like, we started practicing all the songs at 60% speed, 80% speed, 100% speed together, working on band group muscle memory.
You guys got tight.
Some people don't realize, like, you can have the most amazing muscle memory with you learning your solos, but if the band can learn muscle memory together, it can be just a fucking machine. So all those things combined with the time that we spent on the album kind of put us in a place where things were getting really musical. And I think that really inspired John to want to take that step.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how you can be in a room with Travis Orban and not feel inspired. Like, the guy is really that good. And then deal, Aaron, he's our bass player, is such a musical guy, like coming from a whole other place, that that just, it made an explosion. Okay. Yeah. And what it did is it took a, like, that one album tears down the idea of what a Darkest Hour song is.
Yeah.
And I think to some of our core fans, that wasn't good for them because they liked knowing what a Darkest Hour song was, mm-hmm. right? But in general, once the explosion happened, you had 14 songs. If you were to peel that album down to 8, which is basically what Undoing Ruin is, plus a little instrumental piece, it could have been a very aggressive album with very little singing if we wanted to do that. I mean, 14 songs is a lot of songs. Yeah, and
too many, I think, for
a metal record. Definitely too many, but...
Unless it's like Hatebreed and it's like a minute and a half songs.
But one thing we traded up on that album too was we let Sumerian get up in there, mm-hmm. okay? We are like a sponge to producers. You can hear that in every album. The producer leaves his mark like a jackhammer. But on this specific album, instead of working against the label, which we basically did the entire time we were on Victory, and then working basically in lieu of the label as we did on E1, and Century Media just licensed The Human Romance, so it was what it was. Sumerian was involved with the whole thing from the ground up. And Ash, the owner, is like one of the oldest Darkest Hour fans and has put in his love for the band on the fucking table. He put it out there. He let us do whatever we wanted to do and creatively explode that album. And then he pushed us even farther because I think he saw, like, wow, well, John does have a really great singing voice. Like, man, maybe we can break this to radio. Like, do this, do that. And then there was an organic, organic move to that, right? But then there were things that kind of didn't really fit. Like, he really wanted to call the album Fuck Waiting Around to Die. And we just felt like that went against everything the album was doing. Like, how do you call this album Fuck Waiting Around to Die when it's the most melodic? It's confusing, you know? And
well, by our rationale.
Exactly. But maybe it would have added a nice balance to it because it would have seemed really extreme.
Well, I think there are some of the heaviest songs you guys ever wrote on that record. The only thing I wouldn't have done was the one single with the female vocals
on it.
But
the thing is, we had that song, we had it without the girl singer, and it was great.
Yeah.
But having a female voice in the band is something we've always wanted to have.
It's not that you did it. It's that you released it really early in the process, and it colored the record in a way that I don't think actually represented what the record was. Like, it was false advertising.
Yeah.
So it was just more like, I would hear that song and think that's an album cut, and you guys treat it like a single.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I wouldn't have done. But then you said you kind of like, you went out there, you know, you knew how it is. You put a record and you feel the vibe.
Oh, yeah.
And the vibe wasn't...
Well, it's still our highest charting album. So Sumerian, first week charting album. So Sumerian did their work. They got us on that tour with Body Count and...
Mayhem.
Mayhem tour. I mean... Dude, they came to the table with the other end of the spectrum. Yeah. I will say that. But I think once we got out there and we started living it, we started realizing that although we had made small decisions along the way because they felt right, once we were standing there looking at the whole picture, I think we felt like we weren't that band because... Yeah. These songs are so rich and layered and melodic that to pull them off live takes a lot more technology than what we're doing right now.
Yeah, you got to run tracks.
And you got to have in-ears, and your singer better be drinking tea and fucking everything and honey every fucking day, booking days off in between. And, you know, it just isn't who we are. So we did sort of like, you know, a very different move than Suicide Silence, where they sort of went head on to the vibe of like, you don't like this because we changed it up. Well, it's self-titled, you know, exactly the same way we self-titled our album, to stamp that it is the fucking band on there, even though it's changed. And, you know, with Suicide Silence, they kind of went hard at everybody. It was like, this is what we fucking did. With Darkest Hour, I have to admit, we dropped back. We saw what songs people liked, pushed those, went out there, did the Mayhem tour, basically went and supported Machine Head all over the place, you know,
And then when that was done, instead of like pulling out a full headliner and digging in deep and playing those tracks, we sort of decided like, you know, we kind of want to take control because we just, the complete opposite of what had just happened. Like,
yeah,
we played, it felt great. Like signed to Ash's label, going to Wilshire Boulevard, wherever the fuck it is. And like going up in that high rise. And like, it just felt like we were really trying to make a super important album and really just take this band that John and I had worked so many years on and like crack it open and get to that place where like Machine Head had got, and you know, some of the other bands that we look up to that are doing well and also had long careers. And in the end, I think the funny thing, the ironic thing is that when we turned around, we had to take a chance right away. We had to crowdfund the album because it was the only way to be 100% in control. Because I try to tell people, Sumerian wanting to be in control of some of the creative is not that strange. Victory did too, and E1 would have liked to too, but they didn't really think feel like they could dip
we
in as much.
We never had a label get involved in anything we ever did.
But musically. Even to me, I feel like when a label funds something, it colors the experience somehow.
Yeah, no, listen,
a lot of people wouldn't invite what we invited in, you know, and that's understandable.
I would have been open to it. To me, it's in some ways, you know, I like getting that feedback. You know,
you're great with it.
No, like I like when you have like a manager listen to something and who, like I remember when we made demos for Determination, and we had a record before that called Reject the Sickness, which was more metalcore, and we did a 3-song demo, and our manager was like, "Where's the chug?"
Yeah.
Like in a negative way.
Yeah.
Like before Determination, like saying like we lost our edge or something, you know. So, and that we didn't agree with. We were like, "Dude, what are you fucking talking about? These fucking songs are killer," you know. But
it's funny that you mentioned a manager, because that also played into the whole thing. Because Mike Mowry, our manager, has been with us almost the entire time we were on Victory, the entire time we were on E1, and he was the one who said, "Hey, if the only way Darkest Hour is going to put out an album where you're going to get 100% of control of everything at this point is if we crowdfund it." And we were like, "Nah, you're crazy." But we started talking to labels again, started the whole thing. It was only one album deal with Ash. So all of a sudden we were like, "Okay, let's try this crowdfund thing. This is crazy." And Mike helped us walk that bridge.
Yeah. So the new album.
Creatively.
The thing is, so even me not really knowing anything about it beforehand, but just when you started like releasing tracks, there was a different, like, it was like this, there was a buzz.
There really was. That actually worked.
Yeah, there was a, yeah, but I think it worked because of what you guys, the songs you made. Like, it's that idea that you're only one, you know, this is, you know, I'll borrow some more shit from Josta. You know, you're only one song from changing your life. Like,
yeah.
Or you can bring something back. Like, I look at a moment like when Meshuggah released the song Bleed.
Yeah.
Like, it brought, because we toured with Meshuggah right before that on the album Catch 33. Mm-hmm. And not for nothing, it was us, The Haunted, and them and Nemec in the States. And for what I thought Meshuggah was, the shows weren't as big as I thought. And I know some of those venues they had played previously and had done like a lot more people. So they were kind of on a downturn. And they made that record Obsidian, and boom, it was like, now they're doing like 2,000, 3,000 seaters, or, you know, in a whole other stratosphere. But it's that idea that metalheads, ultimately, they're about the music. And if you give them the goods, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a little combination of to how we got that buzz was Greg from Southern Lord hit us up. We were recording with Kurt Ballou. I mean, this looks like on paper to a person that's actually a fan of heavy music, really cool. To a label, they're looking at this like Kurt Ballou, Dark Sour. I mean, we tried that to get Victory to let us do that. They were not into it. E1 was not into it. And Ash was definitely not down with it.
Yeah.
So people obviously had an idea of what a Kurt Ballou, Dark Sour album would be. But I think once you had those components and then we gave them the first track off the album, which is just a banger, it set the stage for what is this? And then the next song came out. And it was fucking insane shredder. And then people were like, "Oh, I think I'm digging this."
So, but you're seeing it. You know, just like you kind of felt a vibe on the Darkest Hour.
Self-titled, yeah.
This one, you felt the opposite vibe or just something, a different vibe?
it's not the opposite, because it's not like all of a sudden we're mega, you know, huge from playing super extreme music. It's more we felt the thank you, the sigh of relief from people that have Darkest Hour tattoos and wear your t-shirt till it falls off. I mean, we have some of those diehard fans. We don't have thousands. We have hundreds, but they are vocal.
Well, and you do have thousands.
Well,
collectively.
If you add them all up. And you know what I'm saying? And they basically, they are telling us what we've known, which is that, yes, this is what the band should sound like, or this is amazing. And I'm not saying we're not going to change our sound up, because we do every album some way, but I am saying it's nice to be in a place now where, you know how before I was saying, now we broke open the mold of what a Darkest Hour song is, and then we realized when we all turned around, just the five of us, and said, like, well, what's a Darkest Hour song? We made the new album, which is basically very similar to the first album. So in a strange way, the world's interpret some of the world's interpretation of what a Darkest Hour song and us is the same.
Yeah.
And so to make that self-titled album and to see what it's like to not have the same identity made us realize who we were, you know? And I think we've come full circle to that. I don't know creatively where it will go from here, or even if it should. Although that sounds like a crazy thing to say. I mean, you have 9 Darkest Hour albums. We play an hour and we can't even play songs off of every one. You know, this band could go on tour for 4 years playing Deliver Us all the way through. People will be stoked to see that. You know, and I mean playing The Human Romance all the way through, playing the new album all the way through. So right now, creatively, it's hard to say what to do, because it feels good to just have done something right.
Well, here's the thing. Don't worry about that now. Just enjoy this. So
I'm just trying to enjoy my tour with Doc Hoyle.
Yo, on that note, I want to thank you for being on the show. You're the man. I love you, Mike.
I love you too, man.
All right. Peace out, y'all.
Thank you, world, internet.
That was This Is the Truth from Darkest Hour's new album, Godless Prophets and the Migrant Flora. I think I'm saying that right. I don't know what Migrant Flora is, if that's like a weed reference or these motherfuckers are getting into botanical gardening. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's up with the flora. Godless Prophets, I'm on board with that. That other shit, I don't know, man. I don't know what to say. But, you know, I had to play that song kind of as a dig to the band because it's one of the songs I learned for the tour and I really fell in love with the track and we ended up not playing it. And all every day I would just bust their balls. I'm like, yo, man, we got that song, man. We can play that shit. You know what I'm saying? If y'all want to, you know, just put it out there. I know it. Your boy knows it. And it didn't happen. So, you know, the way I would remember, because I didn't, you know, the new album, I didn't, you know, it's new, so I didn't really know it. So the way I would remember it is like, this is the truth. Like, because that song is the truth. I'm feeling that shit. I think it combines all the things, the great things that Darkest Hour does. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Please pick the record up. It's, even though they crowdfunded it, it was released through Southern Lord Records. And definitely support independent music, support guys who and gals out there who are out there grinding and working for you. That's right, they're doing it for you. And I think that's gonna wrap it up. Actually, before I go, I just want to plug the Bad Wolves show, even though probably many of you will be listening to this, will be after the show, but whoever does check it out beforehand, and if you're in Southern California, Bad Wolves, my new band, will be doing its debut show, our first show ever, on Wednesday, May 24th at the Observatory in the Constellation Room, which is in Santa Ana, California, in Orange County. We'll also be playing with Power Flow, who is the new supergroup with like Billy from Biohazard and Christian from Fear Factory, who is on the show, and also Sendog from Cypress Hill. They got members of Downset. So it's their debut show as well. And this is all hosted by our good friend, Jose Mangan from Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Liquid Metal, and Octane. And it is part of this concert series he's doing called Affliction Metal Night. So this is a pretty exciting week. So even if you will have missed the show, hopefully, you know, missing it will get you all excited and you'll be ready to check the band out. So anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you for the support. Really, really feel grateful for everyone that supports the show. I get so many people that reach out and enjoy this, and that's what it's all about. It's all about connecting. You guys have a great day. Mamba out.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
It is now 2024, and the choice is up to you. Do you listen to good podcasts, or do you listen to bad ones? Well, we've got a suggestion for you. How about you listen to a good podcast for the first time in your miserable life? I can think of one. Overnight Drive. Going strong. 11 years now. The podcast about nothing. Your favorite podcast's favorite podcast. Do you enjoy nothing? So do we. Why don't you come over and check it out? And stop listening to other podcasts. Thank you.